Hey guys, Maria Menounos here. Before your favorite AfterBuzz TV after show begins, I'm so excited to tell you that my new cookbook is out. It's called The Every Girl's Guide to Cooking. It's the quickest, fastest, easiest, most amazing recipes for kitchen newbies and chefs alike. Please check out MariaMenounos.com for more info. Buzz you later.
You're tuning in to the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after show entertainment. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
No.
And the girls love his smile. He's got it. That's it.
That's the one. Welcome to the AfterBuzz.
It's better show. When Norma's creeping through a house, you know, and it's haunting in the background.
Better welcome to the AfterBuzz after show for Bates Motel. This is Bing Crosby and Bob Hope doing the road to
Bali, Chicago style.
Chicago style road to, what does Chicago style mean?
I don't know.
Does that mean they have trombones and triads?
I can't make the jokes I want to make.
Is it like a deep dish pizza?
Why can't you do this pizza? That's all I can say.
We have a guest in the building, I have to say. Can I say?
You should say.
I'm Joe Braswell. Thank you for joining us here on the AfterBuzz After Show for Bates Motel, episode 2. Good night, Mother. We're very excited about it. I'm joined to my left by Dua Casey. Hello, Dua.
Hi, everybody. Welcome.
And I'm also joined by the lovely Joe Sanfilippo.
Nice to be here with you guys.
And we're also on the secret couch that you may or may not be able to see. You can't see. Joined by the lovely Lily Sanfilippo. We won't say anything, but she's here.
She's here.
Goddamn adorable.
Excuse my language. Yeah. And that's why we can't make any jokes about whatever Chicago style might mean.
Yes.
Strictly PG-13 show.
Yes. although, they're maybe anyway. So we're here. So, listen, I didn't know where to start with this episode because there's so much to unpack, but I just do want to just do a couple table setting things first of all and just say that, you know, look, the episode is called Goodnight Mother, which is clearly a reference to Night Mother, the famous Pulitzer Prize winning two-hander play. I think it's by Marsha Norman, so that's also weird.
Did you say obviously?
Oh yeah,
yeah. Night Mother. You know,
obviously,
you're the theater guy. You don't know Night Mother.
If you didn't get that, you're all ignorant sluts. If you walked away from this without knowing,
wait a minute. But clearly, this is based on a 1983 Pulitzer Prize winning. And if you don't know that,
it ran off Broadway for 3.5 weeks. Where were you, people?
Lily's on the couch, like, duh. Night Mother. Everyone knows that, Dad. Night Mother. You don't know Night Mother?
I do not know it.
Some theater honk. That UCLA education.
I'll tell you what. I'm gonna call and get my money back.
UCLA degree in theater. And you don't know theater. Night Mother?
And we were rated the number one theater school while I was there. I don't know what it is now, but at the time.
Oh my God! This is an embarrassment. I'm embarrassed.
I know. I'm gonna have to make a call.
Okay, I'll rephrase that. Maybe not so clearly, but this is a reference to the classic Pulitzer Prize winning play by Marsha Norman called Night Mother, which is probably one of the most famous two-person plays ever. And why I reference that is this is called Good Night Mother, which is you know, not written by Marsha Norman, but featuring Norman and Norma. But I mentioned that because this was essentially a two-hander. This is like, I mean, you know, almost the entire episode just featured Norman and Norma facing off. And it was very much sort of reminiscent of Night Mother. And I mean, I don't know if you even realize that, but we did go to the hospital for a little bit of Emma. And we had a little bit of Romero. For the most part, it's like about a good 35 minutes of just Norman and Norma. And if we haven't said it enough times, these MFs can act.
They are so good.
They're so incredible. Just to have a situation to watch them do what they do and take us on that ride, emotional ride of through every emotion from fear to compassion to scared to laughter to all that stuff for entire. It was a treat and a half.
This is gonna be that episode, right, where people start yelling at us that we're gushing too much.
No,
we're
not. No.
It's that goddamn good, and that's all there is to it.
I've got plenty more gushing to do, and I'm gonna go on my annual Emmy rant speech, but I'm gonna do that later. But Dua, what did you think of this episode? What's your thoughts?
It was so good. Something occurred to me about 3 minutes into watching this episode. we only have 18 episodes left of this whole show.
Oh yeah.
This show ends at the at season 5. There was they made it really clear that this is only a 5-season series. So having only 18 episodes left, knowing what the ending is going to be, I was so excited. This is going to be such a fun runaway train ride. So the whole episode, I was just really thinking about what Norma was thinking throughout the entire episode. Like, what was she actually thinking? What was going through her mind? You know, because if you get your facts straight, Norma has no idea that Norman has killed Bradley, that Norman has killed Emma's mother.
Well, she does now.
Which I think she suspects, and she's looking.
He's talking about at the end of the episode.
No, he did a full confession.
He's like, this is what you did. How could you have done this?
He laid it out.
You killed Bradley. You killed. He laid it all down.
Yeah,
but she still doesn't know, because the thing is, you really, like, she's still in denial. She still ran after him.
Wait a minute. Is this like the time?
No.
Where we had some biological anatomical.
We had to explain how this all works. We can't explain it today.
Because
I don't feel like getting into that or Santa Claus.
Because there was a confession, but I'll let you finish. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, what? Well,
go ahead.
I could understand. Like, I mean, just think about being a mother in the middle of that scene, which we'll talk about, I'm sure, really, really in depth a little bit later in the show. But being a mother in that scene, she's been on Norman's side this whole entire time. Now she's actually physically afraid of him.
Right.
He said something really poignant. He said, you know, I love you and I'm afraid of you. And that's a really bad combination. And that is very true for her as well.
Right, that makes sense.
It's so brilliantly done. Like, her hope and her constant optimism, her constant hope and belief that something good is going to come of all this, that she'll be able to get to a place where we can just, you know, and it's all reflected in him throughout this entire episode, because all of a sudden he feels that she did all this stuff. So it was so brilliantly done to watch her watching him doing her. You know what I mean? Like, and it was so brilliant, and he was brilliant, and just watching the two of them go through it. And the way that the writers did this, they line it up so carefully, so slowly. They're not in a rush. There's not a whole bunch of things that have to happen this episode. We just gotta go through the emotions here.
I mean, is that ever the case? Have you ever been to a basement motel and felt like the writers didn't line it up so carefully?
No, but I mean, it's another one of those instances where it just you sink into it and you're like, this is just, I don't know about you guys. I was watching it on A&E because my recording stopped and got messed up.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how many times I paused it to just go, you guys are fucking brilliant. Just brilliant stuff. But her hope is reflected in him, and it's that hope and denial, that amazing combination the two of them have together that just allows this whole thing to function.
Well, a couple things. I mean, this was written specifically. I mean, I'm sure Carey and Cartman had something to do with this, but it was written by Tori Spear, and it was a really just a wonderfully written episode. I mean, just as good as they get for Bates Motel, and actually a little different. I think with just the two-hander, they're doing something specific. It's almost like, let's try this and let's try that. Sometimes it's get a little more action. We talked about with Nestor last year. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you get a little more action stuff. Sometimes you get a little more suspense. Sometimes you get a little more humor. This was very specific. It was just a nice two-hander. I want to get a little bit of business out of the way first before we get too deep into this and say hello to all those people who are joining us live on the live stream. Drew S. and Scott and the Candle Vlogger and, of course, Sylvia. And yes, Sylvia Love, I did shave. Thank you very much. Childhood Chore and Shalom and Drew S. and Ron Crawford and all you guys, thank you very much. We normally tape the show live at 1 p.m. Pacific time normally. Mm-hmm. We ran a little late, had some things, so we're taping it today at 4 p.m. Pacific time. For those who are scoring at home, we'll be back on time next week doing it live at 1 p.m. Pacific. So that's kind of when we do the show every day. Every Tuesday, 1 p.m. Pacific, and then after that, it's on YouTube forever, and it's on iTunes forever, and we will live forever, unlike Norma, unfortunately. Because
no, we know how this ends.
Because 18 episodes in.
18 episodes from now.
She winds up up in the window in a rocking chair.
Yeah. And I will
probably
tell you,
for the finale show, I would guess.
Maybe not. So, okay. So I
like that we got little twinges into Norman without Norma. Though, you know, checking the people in, we got little kind of like,
it was
very reminiscent of the scene in Psycho where he's checking, you know, Janet Leigh's character in for the first time.
Well, there's a lot going on in terms of references. I mean, we also, the opening shot we see is Norma in the window, in her window. We have the I love when every now and then they give us the Hitchcock, the Hitchcockian from the movie shots. So we have the original shot from Psycho of the house with Norma, Mother Norma, in the window. But this time she's doing a bit of business on the phone. But it's that shot. So we had that. And then we had a little bit of Norman, behind the counter, which is also a little nod to Psycho's where, well, as you mentioned, Dua. But
Room, I believe that Norma runs into at the end there when Freddy was chasing her. Didn't she run into the room that overlooks? She ran into that
yes, her bedroom.
Yeah, she ran into the bedroom, the window that is eventually going to be the
where when she was looking for the gun.
What's her room?
Yeah. Well, yeah, but I mean, you know, screamed out at me.
Right. That's true. I don't know. This episode did it creeped me out more than almost any other episode creeps me out because I genuinely am terrified of Norman Bates. Like, he scares the crap out of me. And I don't know how he's like we talked about this last week. He's not a big guy. You know, he's tall. And Freddie Highmore's not the stockiest actor. But whatever he does with his eyes and whatever he does in his performance, I completely believe that he's capable of doing anything at any given moment, which scares the crap out of me, number one. Number two, what Freddie Highmore does with his delivery, like his very specific Norman cadence, this, well, I'm going to do this, like that very
it's
specific
eerie.
It is eerie, yeah. And it is like, where are the grocery bags, mother? Oh, you, and then the condescending tone, oh, you went, that's interesting, you went shopping, where are the bags? I'm like, where are the bags, Norma? You better have some bags.
He's unpredictable, and I think that scares the crap out of her.
Unpredictable, and then the range of his complete calmness to boy-like, like, I don't know, mom, I love you, to complete rage when he goes when he goes ballistic, and that, but he's pretty much a straight line for the most part when he's not going this way or the other, whereas Norma is reacting around him the whole time. So you have this kind of centered performance by Freddie Highmore, if you will, of just being normal, like when he's calm, I don't know, mother. And you have this sort of like erratic performance of Norma being all over the place, like, it's okay, honey, I don't know, from fear to scared to like she's trying to figure him out. It's all in her face, like, did he kill her? Is she doing this? I'm afraid. Like, what's all in her face? It is nuts. And that's the last thing I'll say in my rant, and then we can get into this. This is where I say, damn you, Academy of Television and Arts and Sciences. Sciences, not scientists. That's a different academy. Sciences. The Emmy folks. The folks who give out the Emmys. Please, 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 pretty please, nominate Freddie Highmore. Nominate Vera Farmiga. I mean, they have to be nominated. This is a GD travesty that they don't get the nominations and the win, but this performance right now, episode 2, I've seen it. This is it. This is the Emmy performance. Give them the GD Emmy. That's
I don't know if you knew if you guys knew this. Scientists, because that's who we're going after, they respond very well to banging on the table. Joe, this is very, he studied what he was going to do here.
Yeah, they do.
He's
been a table banger for the past two episodes. Have you noticed that?
I have not. I hadn't really put it together. That's table banging Braz.
Yeah, that's what they call me in college.
I gotta tell you, TBB.
Yeah.
She's so good.
Yeah.
She's just so amazing to watch. Mm-hmm. And I tell people who don't watch this show, I'm like you're missing out on what is probably the finest performance of anyone of her generation. Over and over again, every week, it's like And what's funny is I've seen her in films, and I've seen her. I don't think she's ever been in anything where she could flex like this. Obviously, I mean, who writes a role like this?
She does great.
It's not, but I think but this is next level good. Stuff.
Yeah, but
I'm not saying that she's bad or anything else. I'm saying, but this level, what she's able to do with this character, what they're able to write for her, and the places she's able to take this, it's you can only have something like this when you have a writing staff and a production team that trusts an actress and knows that she can do this, so they can write for it, and that can only happen over time, and that can only happen with some incredibly gifted, talented people who work together, and it really is. We are really witnessing something that is unique and a treat.
Anybody else in this specific role could make it seem very, very cheesy, very, very kitschy. I think that this episode...
Yeah, it's fraught with danger. You're 100% right. There's pitfalls everywhere.
It could be... I mean, it could be... If somebody could really rip apart this performance and make it awful. This specific episode was such an intricate, elegant game of cat and mouse between Norma and Norman, and the way that he's certain in his mind that his mother is committing these murders, and she is terrified of him and is now looking for a body that she suspects him of killing based on what, you know, his final blackout is. So it's this, they're both watching each other, thinking that the other, like, it was so good.
But let's talk about that for a second, because they both have the exact same reaction. Their loyalty is always to each other. And it's interesting that she knows he killed at least one person. I mean, there's no question she knows he killed her husband, right? Mm-hmm. Yes. That's not up for grabs. That's not, there's no denying that.
Yeah.
Instead of...
And also the teacher.
Right.
The teacher as well.
We have that locked in, right?
Yep.
She knows
that's
that for sure.
Ms. Watson.
Yeah.
So
Ms.
we
Watson,
know that Ms. Watson and Dad have been killed by... She knows that. And at no point has she made any effort to turn him in, to say, hey, you know what? I can't contain this. Her loyalty is to him. I don't want him in
that
place.
That's off the table, turning him in. It took her this long to acknowledge that he needs help.
Right.
Like, I mean, like,
but that's what's interesting. You know. It's mom and I against
mastering
the world.
Mastering denial.
And he did the exact same thing. So now he's walked away because now his head, right? He believes that she did all these murders. And instead of him calling the police and saying, hey, my mom killed these people, we're going to deal with it here, and maybe we'll just off ourselves tonight. I'll just kill us both, and that'll be it.
Yeah.
But and that was that was good. It was Good Night Mother, right? Nightmare.
Nightmother, which is yep. You know,
that's the plot right there.
The plot is of Nightmother. She announces the beginning that I'm not gonna make it through the day, like I'm committing suicide, and this is kind of where it went to with Norman at the end of that, saying, so this is what's going to happen to both of us. When she said it, I'm like, you first, Norman.
But right. I've got an idea about the order.
But so I do want to go back. I want to, you know, unpack that, because that's really all we have to unpack is that. So we'll get into that a little more. But let's just jump ahead of getting the other two storylines out of the way very quickly. And let's talk about the Emma and Dylan situation. Then let's talk about the Norman and the Normero situation. So Dylan and Emma. What a sweet little love story this is turning out to be.
Yeah.
That's really funny that you say that, because I really thought that after the conversation with Dylan and Emma's father that he was going to go in and break up with her.
Oh, really?
I thought he's
leaving that open.
I think that after, I mean...
Why?
It was very reminiscent of the conversation that Emma's father had with Norman when he was on the doorstep in season one of, you know, she's delicate, she's, you know, don't hurt her feelings, she likes you. It was very similar. You know, it's like, what is the future going to be for you guys? And I thought that, you know, now she has lungs, now she's not sick. Now what, you know, don't, pretty much just be careful. Like, this is somebody
you know, let's not pretend that it doesn't change the dynamic. It does.
Yeah.
I mean, it really does. All of a sudden, she has all the options in the world. And if you're a guy like Dylan, who just found out, number one, my uncle is my dad, all that stuff is in my family, my brother's a whack job, my mother is all the things that Norma is.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in this...
Hot.
Right?
Kidding.
That was Braswell that said it. Don't, it's not me. you know, and I'm in this pot business, I've killed a guy, he's probably killed a couple guys now, right? He has killed a few. Yeah, and all those things are on him, and when you're dealing with someone who maybe has something, you know, in her life, who kind of puts her in a not as advantageous a position, all that is okay, because she's equally screwed up just because of biology, but now she's not. She's fine. And so all that changes the dynamic.
But who is she? I think that's the interesting part of Emma now, is who is she? Who is Emma without her sickness and without her illness? Because that was so much of her identity.
Yeah,
throughout
now
the
she's
whole
a dynamic
show.
Woman who's going to figure out who she is. And I think that if you're with someone who has a huge shift like that in life, I think you ought to be wary, because there are definitely good odds that this is not going to go the distance anymore.
Hmm.
But it's interesting to me the way he played it too. I thought they really gave it some thought, and they played it smart. Because he went in there and kind of left it up to her a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, you know, just kind of, he didn't come out there and say anything, but
he's still interested.
Yeah, I think now he's feeling very much like, I don't measure up to her.
Yeah, I really enjoyed sort of the realism of that anti-intubation scene.
Oh, that's so good. I was just thinking that.
I was going to ask, is that really how it goes? Is that where they just
be,
kind of
right?
Like stand back and see if you can breathe with those lungs that they just put in?
Yeah, I mean, they're a hospital. They're well equipped to revive you if you can't breathe. But so they got to see if those bad boys work.
Yeah.
So it's like, and it's like, do it. And, you know, poor Dylan's like, do something.
Yeah.
Like, Dylan, take it easy. They're running in front of my doctors. They got it.
So good. So good.
But yeah, I mean, you know, a lot of drool.
Yeah. But bravo on her performance, because that was really believable when you're just like trying to breathe in and you can't breathe in. Like, it looked completely authentic.
Yeah. We learn a little more about Pops, right? A little more about Dad. And we know that he's he's a professor.
Yeah.
And he taught English literature.
Not just a taxidermy guy.
Not just a taxidermy.
He's got some poems in his back pocket.
Yeah, he's got some stuff back there. And I like the what it felt like in my, I remember it as a smash cut, but the transition out of mentioning he did English lit and then going to Norman reading Dickens.
Yep.
Yeah.
Reading that
Dickens. I think it went the other way, didn't it?
Did it?
I don't remember.
I may have it wrong.
They're back and forth, but reading that, the Great Expectations. Now, they taught you Dickens in UCLA, right, Joe? You know that guy is.
Oh, man.
Obviously.
I want to open this up.
No. So I'm asking. I don't know what they teach you over there in Westwood.
No, you since 98. First time you got one on me. You're not going to go. First time.
Anyway, yeah, so...
Seen him so happy.
We'll talk about that Dickens reference later. But so, I don't know. I mean, so I'm hopeful of the whole Dylan. I can't help but feel everything that we see of any kind of happiness in this show is not going to make it.
It's a lie.
Because
everything.
Because, again, we know where this goes with Norman in the Bates Motel by himself, checking people in, and no one knows... All these people know all the stories, so either they're... I don't know where they're all dead or they're all out of town, but no one's going to make it. So I don't know. I feel like this is all sort of Shakespearean, headed towards the sort of like Shakespearean tragic end for all these people who are in love. But in these moments, I really hope for the love of Dylan and Emma. I love to call people by their real names.
But don't you kind of hope that they get in a car and just drive? Maybe they get to California and they don't look back and we never have anything to do with it. It's all gone.
Maybe
and
they don't read the news maybe leave the country.
Yeah, maybe they're in France or Germany or someplace else that's not here.
Yeah. Anyway, so that does that. So then
we don't know about many countries. We went to UCLA. There's only a couple that they teach us about.
Yeah, they know countries.
I hear there's like 100 and some odd. I only know about this.
So the other storyline that we got to see is we get to see a little more of Romero, right? Mm-hmm. And we love Nestor, we love Romero.
Yes, we do.
And folks online, I know that Shalom Joe loves Nestor online here. We all love Nestor, but we get to see him show up at the door, and this guy...
Did you say Shalom Joe?
I just heard that. Joe is a person online who says, I absolutely love Nestor.
Okay. It just reminded me, as soon as you said that, I heard of, like, I thought of, like, Seymour Butts. I was like, I wonder if that's his real name, that's really his name, or if it's just, like,
Shalom Joe.
We love Nestor, too.
Shalom, shalom, yeah?
Yeah, so...
We're going to have him on the season this episode.
Several seasons this episode we'll have him.
Several seasons.
Yeah. We'll guest him sometimes. A season this episode we'll have? Good. Excellent.
So, we see a very different Nest. We see a very different Romero. Like, you know, after we saw Norma woke him up and he was like, we see him in the pilot. And it looks like we don't see the process off screen, which I would love to see Romero's night from the moment that he woke up and thought about it and tossed and turned and took a drive and realized that, like, what brought him? I would love to see the weird web series of following Romero from the moment he, like, Norma left and then gave him that phone call to what brought him, very sort of distraught, to the door, sort of saying, like, are you okay? Like, I'm here. Like,
Norma, I had some coffee. I thought it through, and
yeah.
I want to pay for it. Why do you think he went back into the fireplace to get the money that he got from Bob Parrish?
Can I tell you guys, this is the first time that his character has zigged when he should have zagged. Yeah. I think this is the first mistake that we've seen Romero make.
Oh.
He's been so careful and so cautious.
I think that Norma is his Achilles heel.
He is. This is a Greek tragedy. He is a Greek character. He is absolutely the perfect hero, but he's got an Achilles heel. She's blonde and she's a little crazy. And this is the first. But this mistake was huge.
Yeah. Like I said, he's always zagging.
This is a zig, and he should have definitely zagged.
This was a zig.
I love the way they shot it too. Like that scene in the car. That was the moment where he's on the phone with her. You know, or was he leaving the message for her? When he's telling her, like, I got him into.
Oh yeah, that was the conversation.
Yeah.
Okay.
And when he slides that money across to the redhead over there at Pineview or Pine Ridge or whatever.
No, Shady Acres.
Shady Super Acres. Yeah. But it slides that over, and that was, to me, that was like that. These are the moments. These are these Greek tragic moments. I think Romero's going to die. This is going to be where it starts. This is a mistake.
Well, yeah, there's a lot going on there. I mean, obviously that money is dirty, but backing up from there to answer the question is, he's doing it because he's in love. He loves Norma. I've been saying this the whole time, and I think he loves her. And now he loves Norma, and he's willing to put. You know, he's got a relatively empty existence. I mean, him being the peacekeeper of this corrupt town all these years, and we know his family's not the best, and he has all this stuff. And now that he seemingly has cleared the decks, and he seemingly is, you know, what's he got? He's got a little bit of money, and who's going to give it to? All he's got is that crazy lady in that creepy old house.
That's a really, really great point, is that he has cleared the decks. He's gotten rid of Bob. He's gotten, you know, the drug trade, that's under control now, and that's, you know, operating at a point where it's manageable. But yeah, there really is. It's like when you're a sheriff and you're good at your job, pretty soon you're not going to have that much work left.
You know, there's a thing that happens, I think, that I'm not sure how it is for ladies. I know how it is for guys. When you can get in the zone for a long time if you have nothing else in your life. You can really be in the zone. Mm-hmm. And when you get to a place where, you know, I think of it as profit taking, where you go like, you know what, I did a lot of great work. I should expand my life and start to enjoy it. Mm-hmm. I think that process is where a lot of people make mistakes. A lot of people they buy too big a house. They get too many toys. They start drinking. They do whatever they're going to do, and they lose that edge that made all of it possible. And I think that's what's happening with Romero right now. He's had that edge the whole time. He's been the guy who knows what to do. Knows what to do. And now, all of a sudden, he's making a huge mistake. And I think it's going to bite him in the ass. And I think this is the beginning of his undoing.
Well, we're all rooting for Romero. We're all rooting for Romero. But I do like, you know, just watching their interactions and Norma and Romero interactions. I do love how he's always in an opposite world of Norma, right? Like they're never quite synced up. Like when he's at home and like, ugh. I just killed Kevin Ram, and I got this money, and here I am resting, and here comes Norma. I need to get married. Yeah. He's like, what? Yeah. Huh? Married?
They can never quite hit the same
way. Shady Acres? Yeah. And then he finally calms down, and thinks she's vulnerable, and he worries about her. He finally calms down, thinks it through like a regular human, realizes I do love this woman, goes to tell her, like, good news. I'm checking up on you. She's like, mm-hmm. What are you doing here?
Yeah. She was dismissive of him when he showed up at that door. She was like, that conversation before never even existed. Yeah. She's like, hey, what's up?
He's like, well, I'm here to check up on you. You showed up on my door. You asked me to marry you.
I'm fine.
She's like, oh, yeah, that thing. Oh, that was dumb.
Rest of our lives together? I don't even know what I was. I'm sorry. That was weird. I had too much coffee.
Yeah.
Why didn't she just tell him that she is scared shitless of her son?
Because she protects her first order
hope and of denial.
Business. Her first order of business. Actually, Joe. Actually, for those of you who think Joe doesn't write anything down, he actually wrote that down.
Hope and denial.
That's her number one mission. Her first mission is to protect Norman at all costs. So she can't say he's dangerous. She can't even say that loud to herself, let alone to Romero. Like he is dangerous. He is. I'm afraid of him. He's in trouble. She barely gets to that moment of like, he needs help. And then it's like, okay, well, I'm maybe afraid of him. Then it's like, okay, he's dangerous. But it took her a long time to get there.
The denial is so strong. And on those phone conversations, Norma, is he dangerous? No.
Yeah.
Because she just and how many times did they have him ask that same question, right? How many times did that appear in the script? Yeah. Is he dangerous?
Yeah, and because she knows what that means, if then they gotta come
that's
take
it.
Her.
Yeah.
And
take
she
also,
back to county where he promised she wouldn't go. Right? She promised.
She also knows what's back there. I mean, she knows that she killed a couple people. You know, so she's already trying to keep the shit in the horse, as you say, Flippa.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
What do you think that Norma was going to do if and when she found Emma's mom at the bottom of the pit? What was her next move?
I don't think she ever knows. Are you kidding? Norma.
Exactly. That's.
This is your analysis of Norma.
You think Norma went down there with those what, that amazing
that was a great,
fisherman
like, outfit?
Great outfit, by the way.
Paddington rocking. Bear
you
type of.
You don't just slap that on.
That's what I'm saying. That took time.
The mirror,
and then you gotta do the thing.
Her hair is like flipped.
You know?
with her galoshes.
To answer that question, I'll let you finish my answer, because to answer that question, Joe, is she never knows what she's going to do. She's emotional. She's an emotion-driven character.
Exactly. Well, Vera Farmiga actually just recently gave an interview. I have it on Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter. It is behind the scenes of season 4 Bates Motel, and she talks about Norma just moves in a forward trajectory. That's all she does. Whether she falls on her face or whether she does anything, she's just moving forward. So
all she does is
she's looking out the window. She's like, Norman, why don't you go take a nap while I go? She has no clue what's going to happen next. No idea what's going to happen next. She just knows that she's moving in a forward progression. That's it. She's reactive.
Almost like, you know, in Up, the dog is like, squirrel. You know, it's like, she knows that when she has a thought, she's like, oh my God, there could be a body down there. I'm just going to go check it out.
Yeah.
Like, she's not thinking, well, if there's a body, then that means I got to
eat. What was that glove? Whose glove was that?
It was somebody working on the thing, and nobody's glove. Whoever dug the hole for, remember they came out and he made the workman dig the hole and then obviously not finish the pool. You remember?
Yeah, but I just think this show doesn't just put anything in willy nilly.
Well, I think that was just to give you a little something like, oh, here's something, but what is it? Oh, it's a workman's glove. It's nothing.
I don't know. I tend to agree with Dua that it's something there for a reason, but we don't know what it is.
You guys think the workman's glove matters?
I think everything matters in the show. Personally.
I think that's what's great about the show is it forces you to pay attention. Maybe the workman's glove means absolutely nothing, but if it comes up in another episode and is an integral part of that of a storyline, then I won't be shocked at all.
Yeah, I agree too. What was I going to say?
I don't know. Spit it out, man.
I'm sorry, I just saw something.
I was like, huh? Squirrel!
Is it from Shalom?
Shalom's the sweetheart. she did a lot to say. Or he. I don't know. Where were we? Oh, yeah. So Norma had no idea what she was doing, but she went when she did that, and when she went to go check on, you know, whatever's down there. But back to them never being on the same page at the same time, Romero and Norma, like, you know, he's basically trying to get something from her. And the thing is that, like, you see Norma as, like, when she reaches that level of vulnerability, it takes a lot to get her there. So everything else is just, she's has this protective layer of, like, everything's okay, I don't want to talk about it. By the time she gets to that gooey center of vulnerability, like, you've really worn her down. And that moment, she's only thinking about Norman, only thinking about protecting Norman, only figuring out whatever, and nothing else matters in that specific moment. And so when Romero, you know, said, look, I got the money, I'll figure it out, he did go down there, and that was a cool scene. He did basically, you know, beat up someone in the parking lot and do whatever he had to do.
Yeah.
Because he kind of just gave her the, like,
yeah,
I know how this works.
There's a bed back there for Senator's son, something like that. She's like, come on.
Like that. She's like, I'm not sure I know what you mean. Like, you know what I mean. You know what's in there. A little something for you. Da, da, da. And I thought, like, I don't know how it's going to play out, but he's pretty confident.
No.
And I love how they didn't have to, like, you know, they didn't have to play that scene out. We just cut to, like, I got her in. You know,
boom.
I'm like, Romero!
And I like how they reminded you that his mother used to be in places like this.
Yes.
And almost reminding you, well, this is Romero's attraction to Norma and the family.
Exactly.
Because it's familiar to him.
Good call, Dua.
Yeah, I just thought of that.
Yeah. No, so then we have the next time we see the next call is her, you know, her telling, you know, Romero telling them that. And just their reactions alone is for two people who weren't in the room together. Was so interesting. Like, Romero sort of like, I'm very happy I did it, and then not necessarily getting the reaction she wanted, but then still feeling good about it. And then we don't know, he can't see the way Norma's reacting, but Norma's reactions were like disbelief, and then like relief, and then like, this guy is amazing. It's a little bit of like, oh, Romero, and then it was a sweet like moment, and all on her face. Did I mention she can act?
Did I mention
the scientist, the television scientist?
You told the scientist.
Yeah. Okay.
you did it with the banging on the table.
They should give her an Emmy. Anyway, so that was all fantastic. And then, of course, the concern of when she says, look, all he's got to do is sign the papers. I don't know what can happen, but as long as he's not dangerous, he's not dangerous, is he?
Again.
Right?
Nah.
There it is.
So then when she does finally make the call, and upstairs to Romero, I'm just going down the Romero thread line, and we can go back to Norman and Norma. When he does finally make the call to Romero, excuse me, She is. Do you think? I feel like she thinks she's gonna die.
I think she does. Yeah.
She's. It was very like. You
it
know,
was almost a goodbye call.
Yeah. Like he's dangerous. Like, I do need your help. And by the way, thank you for everything you've done. If I don't make it through the night.
Yeah.
You know that's enough to get you know to get Romero running.
Well, that at that point she at that point she's hiding from him and she knows the gun is there. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's very, and at that point, he's pretty much said, I, you know, you should be afraid, mother, and I don't want to have to do this, but, you know, he has a gun, he's unpredictable. I think that she was very much fearful for her life. I think that that's what it would have to take in order for her to turn her own son in.
It did.
Like, it has to get that bad.
Hope and denial to the point of, like, and even when she woke up, right, when she comes downstairs, you know, Bob Hope and Bing Crosby are playing,
yep.
House is totally quiet. Did she pick up the phone and call again? No.
No.
She's going to go downstairs and try to handle it herself.
Yeah.
Yeah. How eerie still, was that scene? And when, I was scared.
Let me ask you guys a question. I'm no doctor, but where do you find 47-inch scissors? Where does one come across shears of that magnitude?
I got two places. Every horror movie I've seen.
Yes.
And you, the Mickey and the Giant.
Thank you. So it's one or the other. So you can either...
When you're a tailor...
Seven with one blow!
That's right. Seven with one blow?
Seven with one blow!
That's
1,000,000 golden pazoos.
Yes. Yeah. So Mickey's got one of those.
And every horror movie ever.
Every horror movie. That's
so it's the Mickey's that, got no one idea. In every horror movie ever scissor shop that is... it should be in Burbank. I'm sure we could find it.
I don't know. So let's get a little bit of Norman and Norma interaction. So you know this it gets confusing for those keeping score at home again. Things from Norman's point of view because they like we go over this a lot, but like you know there's the Norman as Norman and then there's a Norman when he blacks out when he turns into Mother Norma. Mm-hmm. Then there's a Norman when he's hallucinating he's talking to Mother Norma. Mm-hmm. You know and then so there's all these different levels of that. It's weird to think about what he remembers because if he's in a place where he's talking to Mother Norma and he blacks out and he is Mother Norma, like he remembered what happened, what Mother Norma did. He remembered visually seeing her do that, even though that was him.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like it's like out of the way he remembers things.
I don't know if that's necessarily a consistent thing or if he just had a flashback.
Right.
Because he seemed to have, like at the beginning of the episode, he seemed to have a flashback of what happened. But I don't know if he just remembers that happening that way all the time. You know, I think. I think
he remembers it. I think, but that's how he remembers it. He remembers it in flashback. But he doesn't associate himself with it.
Yeah, it's like, exactly. It's like, I know Mother was there.
He takes an outside perspective. He takes not a first person.
I think that this is new because he never felt like that with... He was pretty certain for a while that he's the one that killed... That he couldn't remember. Yeah, he said, I can't remember. And when he blacks out, he can't remember. But now it seems like he's remembering his blackouts as his mother.
Right.
So it's almost like we're going backwards just a little bit.
I know what you did.
Yeah, like he had a flashback. Now, I think that with Bradley, he thought that his mother did that. And he was coherent for that. And he knew that. And he goes, I need to get my mother. She's in trouble when he's at the mental institution. The whole time he's following her. But I don't think that he was coherent about this.
Well, we talked about this last season. I don't know if you guys remember. This was a transition he was making gradually.
Yeah.
And gradually it went from Norma, remember, as standing next to him, telling him to do these things, right? And telling him to that you know what you have to do. You have to kill Miss Watson, and you know what kind of girl you have to do it. You know what you have to do. So she's encouraging him. So we go from encouraging, but he's doing it, to eventually morphing into. Him and he's kind of like crossed over to this place now where instead of her encouraging him and him seeing himself do it, he's crossed over mentally so where he just witnessed her doing it. Now, obviously, I don't know what that represents in terms of the illness, but that's been the transition.
But what's interesting is to watch Norman sort of sleuth this out and figure this out for himself. Like, he's like, and at the ice thing, and do I remember, it must. Not one moment does he ever go like, "I blacked out, and this is me. I'm crazy." It's like, "I got it, mother." You know, it's like that weird thing. It's just to watch him go through that, and then on the flip side of that, to watch poor Norma like make these realizations. Like, what do you mean? I locked you in, and then you did this. What do you? No, I didn't do that. What did you do? She can't say it out loud. Like, oh, that was you, honey. Uh-huh. But like, what else did I do? You know, that whole moment, and then the horror, and like when he's like, I know what you did, mother. You did this, you did that. That woman, like, what woman? You know, the woman you killed with the big earrings.
The one who didn't check out.
Just thinks in her mind, like, oh my God, Emma's mom? You killed Emma's mom? But she can't say that. She's like, where did she go? You know, it's all that is just so, so well done.
Do you think part of the reason that he is accusing her so much is because she is fearful of him and he's almost projecting off of that? Because they're so intertwined as human beings. Yeah. And it's like, now that she feels, now that he feels her fear towards him, I think that maybe he's just projecting off of that. And he's like, well, why is she scared of me? Well, no, I should be scared of her.
Right.
And then now he's remembering these things in the point of view of his mother.
What's interesting, though, is how he now has taken this position of power. Like, oh, no, you should be scared of me. Because I'm not going to let you do this anymore, mother.
He's the righteous man now.
But this is always, this has been brewing, though. It's been brewing, like, I'm not a little boy anymore, mother. Well, I'm 18 now.
You know what happened this episode that we have never seen before is that he didn't only, he saw his dad.
Yeah.
That's new. Yeah, that's new.
That is a new thing. So it's now that his, you know, delusion of his mother is almost the enemy. He saw his dad, which is almost like, you know, the polar opposite, because his dad is dead and probably represents everything his mother is not.
Yeah.
And so now that he has this another delusion within, you know.
And also that the dad is doing, of course, what is the dad doing? Getting him off the hook. Actually, it was your mother who killed me. Who did that? You didn't do that. And your mother's a bad one. And your mother. So he's like conflicted, like, oh, thank God I would never do this to you. It had to be my mom, but I still have to protect my mom because I love her. I don't know what to do, you know. And it's interesting that the dad, you know, kissed him. Like, it's almost like he, in his own mind, is absolving himself from that guilt.
The first murder,
right?
Yeah.
Which is insane. Ooh. And then also, yeah, and so that side kiss. And then also, you know, someone put it out here in the live chat, but, you know, they had a kind of a nice little arrangement here because, you know, Norma knew about what Norman did. She's been protecting him the whole time. Mm-hmm. And then don't forget that.
Yeah, she already killed. She killed what's his name?
She killed old what's his name? The dude who tried to do bad stuff on
the table.
And so,
so and then they buried him in the harbor.
Right. And then there's Miss Watson. So the thing about this is Norma has always thought she had complete control of the situation, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I know what I'm doing here. I have control over this. I have control over him. And now she sees that, like, I don't have any control over this.
Nada.
Like, I know he needs help. I'm in control of getting him help. Let me just give him help because the Lord knows what he's going to do. But this was the moment where she's like, I can't. I'm afraid of this dude.
Yeah.
And all these crazy moments, and I just want to, we'll have a couple, we'll have a couple more minutes, but I just want to just, you know, make note of, you know, the recurring theme of all the old timey stuff. Like, you know, I like the idea of, like, what movies do you want to watch? It's like, oh, what do you got? A little Terminator? What do you got? A little
little Key Largo or
Key Largo and His Girl Friday?
Yeah.
Like what? You know. Anyway, so back in the 30s, he's back in the 30s of the movies and 30s and 40s, and then 60s. No.
Yeah.
Who?
Those.
Key Largo is not 50s, 60s.
All right, maybe I'm wrong. Right. I've been wrong before.
His Girl Friday. I don't know. I'm looking up. I could be wrong.
I've been wrong.
UCLA, they should taught you that.
No, but they did. We covered that.
But so there's that. And then the other thing is the who bumps around the house just open, like, just reading Dickens aloud? You know, like,
well, his mother.
To his mother.
Well, we've talked about this before. They live in this little altered reality of theirs and where she wears those outfits. And you remember when she jumped out of it and she sold the car, got the Mustang, dressed like a, you know, like she was 20.
And then last, the whole, we see, like, it with them watching the old Bing and Bing Crosby and stuff. So that's that stuff. So then last, obviously, they chase each other down. I mean,
Key Largo, 1948.
Okay, good.
I was off by 2 years.
Hey, I said 30s and 40s. But His Girl Friday, look that up. So anyway, so this last suspenseful scene where she is, like, forced to do whatever it is, I have to mention this, is great because she, the confrontation, the final confrontation, she has the scissors, he has it 1940?
Mm-hmm. Okay. I couldn't be more wrong, it's impossible.
It's all right. He has a gun, and she comes to him and disarms him by seducing him.
I know.
Last, carry the lead.
Last thing in my back pocket that I can do, I'll do it.
Which she uses all the time.
And as we've said before, right, you guys were saying earlier, she's always moving forward. Whatever she needs to change tactics, that's fine. Yeah. I'm going to keep going.
And it's like, what are you doing, mother? I'm just kissing you like I've kissed you a thousand times.
Oh.
It's like a weird thing of, like, if you're closing your eyes, you're listening to it sounds right. If she's saying it sounds right, but I'm like, no, I'm watching the way you're kissing him, Norma. That ain't the way.
It's not supposed to be.
My mama don't kiss me like that.
I've known my mom almost my whole life. Never.
Well, it's so funny because I was just thinking before.
Right, we're out here, Zach.
Oh, I was just thinking before that we that we haven't seen this part for a while. Like, it got really incestuous right around season two, but we just haven't, like, it's just been all confrontational, all negative.
But this also brings to the surface that she's self-aware, the self-awareness.
She's aware of it, yes.
And they had an episode where they referenced it before, but the self-awareness of it is, and, you know, there's also the history of incest. The whole thing is, like, icky and weird. Uh-huh. But, and then we'll get to predictions. Actually, let's get into predictions because we'll talk about the last thing. Let's real quick predictions, we'll get out of here.
Your After Buzz TV predictions.
We can dovetail predictions into the last thing we saw, which is like him going to county, but she comes down, then rather him going to county, she has him sign the thing.
Well, what do you think he wrote down? We don't know that he signed it.
F you, mother.
He could have written Norma. He could have written Donald Duck.
No, I think that he signed it.
You think he signed it?
I think he signed it because at the end of the day,
I'll never sign it is probably what he said.
When all was said and done, he didn't stop. He didn't tell the sheriff, you need to get her. She's just killed three people.
Right. Nor did he like guns blazing. Pop, 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 pop.
Yeah, he didn't. He stopped and he obeyed his mother like he always does. And then he would just, you know, and he went and he's going to be resentful. I think my prediction. Two predictions. I predict that Norma's actually going to be really, really lonely because as much as this relationship is dysfunctional, I don't think that she is anything without it. So I think that she's going to go through this crazy, almost like psychosis, loneliness. And then I think that Emma's lungs are going to turn on her.
No.
Ooh, your dark prediction.
I think it's true. This show is dark. It's not me. It's the show.
Joe?
I said it already. Romero, this is the beginning of the undoing of Romero. I think that the future, which is what we talked about with Emma and Dylan, I mean, that was what that whole scene is about. It's all about a future. And we've got this possible future with Romero and Norma. And the irony is that I don't think any of them are going to have a future. And we do know that the only person on this show that does get a future for sure is the only one who's a complete psycho.
No. Two predictions. Me predicting you predicting the floor.
Oh!
No. So
don't judge. Scientists?
I think that Norman's going to go to Shady Acres and he's going to go there, and I feel like Shady Acres is not going to be what it's cracked up to be. I think Shady Acres is...
Some guy shady going over at Pine View.
I think that like it seemed perfect and he get in there and he's going to get the treatment that seems like the best treatment, but it's probably not going to be so great in there.
Lobotomizing.
And I think that he's going to come out like, I'm fine. They cured me, mother. And everything's going to be, and think everything is wonderful and happy.
It's just going to make him worse.
And it's going to make him worse. Or he will be cured and then some crazy psychotic event will happen at the end of season four to bring us into season five that relapse him.
Imagine Norma's guilt making Shady Acres actually made him worse, not better.
Well, we do keep in mind, you know, we do have Bradley's mom, or not Bradley's mom, but Olivia Cook's mom.
Emma's mom is somewhere.
Well, but loose. And when she comes back and says, Norma tried to kill me, who's
Emma's
left to protect
mom
her?
Is dead.
She's dead.
She's dead.
No.
She's dead.
Where's the freezer?
She got out. Moved him out into the pit.
She woke up.
That's the thing. Is that... No, I think that... wait a minute. You said last episode that you thought she was dead. I said, is she dead or not? And you're like, no, she's dead.
No, he said, no, she's dead. I said, I don't know if she's dead. I think she's alive. That's my prediction. Well, let's keep
that's a good prediction.
Well, thank you, guys. We got to get out of here. We're so late.
Well, hey, guys. Before we do get out of here... I've got... This is producer Zach in the booth. I want to tell you guys about... because I don't know if you've ever been curious about a celebrity boyfriend's midlife crisis.
I have not, but tell us about it, Zach.
Or if you've enjoyed hearing stories about behind the scenes of Hollywood.
What kind of stories?
Maybe you're amused by old TV and movie references.
We love them!
Well, then you're going to love The Tomorrow Show with Kevin Undergaro.
Yes. Tell us more about it!
Join the AfterBuzz TV creator and Marie Menounos fiancé, Kevin Undergaro, along with other AfterBuzz TV co-hosts like Roxy Stryer, Ashley Daniels, and some others for all of the insanity. You can watch live Monday and Thursday nights from 7 to 9 Pacific Standard Time on thetomorrowshow.com or subscribe and download it free on iTunes. Go to thetomorrowshow.com for more information.
And I don't know if you guys knew, Kevin proposed on Howard Stern. If you guys haven't checked that out, that was very romantic. She was very surprised.
Yeah, she being Marie.
She being Marie Menounos.
Yes.
So they've been dating for so long. Was she really
19
surprised?
Years. Apparently, yeah.
Really?
All right. So check that out, Tomorrow Show with Kevin Undergaro. I'm going to bully my way onto that show as well, so you can look for me there at some point, too. I'm telegraphing that. Mary Kay Pearl, she's not dead. I'm not going to face it. Thank you all of us joining us in the live chat room. Thanks for everyone who reviewed us on iTunes and gave us 5 stars. Thank you for all you guys who reviewed us on YouTube and check us out. We love you all. We'll be back next week for episode 3 of Bates Motel. We'll see you soon. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com.
I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later!
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.